The subject is about service. We did look at chapter 6 there, and verse 16, 17, 18 a little bit. But we're going to use those as a springboard tonight. Romans chapter 6, verses 16 through 18. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves, slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered, and having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. How often does the notion of servitude cross our mind? And I've often wondered why it is that so many in the church seek to be served and so few seek to serve. Now, all Christians, as far as I'm able to tell, are called to serve. I don't think there's any exceptions on that. And it's not that everybody's got to do everything, but everybody can surely do something. And in doing that, then service is rendered. Now, as we render service to others, we are also serving God in doing that. And there was something one time I remember. It wasn't one time. When a place where I used to work, I don't know, they had somebody sell them some kind of a program. And they jumped into this thing, you know, with both feet. So we had to go to these meetings every once in a while and be indoctrinated. And they would say over and over and over again, I think it was something like 80% of the work in any place of business, 80% of the work is done by about 20% of the workers. I don't know how many times we heard that. Of course, they were not encouraging that kind of thing. They were using that to kind of get everybody to get, you know, more in gear and kind of doing your share. It didn't work. But I thought to myself, somebody's come up with that. You know, they've done the research on it to come up with something like that. Now, I'm saying that because I hope that's not the way it is in the church. You know, that 80% of the work's being done by 20% of the people. I don't think the numbers would be that far apart, although I do think that they might favor that kind of a direction, so to speak. So There is something to think about here, and probably something that we can all work on. Now, the first thing I'd like for us to look at is Jesus' teaching on servitude. We can't look at all of it, but we'll look at some of it as we have an opportunity here. And I'd like for you to look at something, and we're going to look at it in two parts. So we're going to look at one where it's found one place in Luke, but we'll spend most of our time in the account that's found in Matthew. If you turn to Luke chapter 9, and we're going to take a look at verse 46. Now this gives us an idea, and I think I like what Luke says a little better than what you find other places. But whenever you think about Jesus' teaching on servitude, he had to address a certain issue on this. And it's that the disciples thought in terms of a hierarchy. And you see this in Luke chapter 9, verse 46. There was a dispute arose among them as to which of them would be the greatest. Some are going to be the greatest and others they'll be less than that. And as it would follow, there would be some that would be the least and so on. So they're thinking that way. Now, it's true that in anything, I don't care what it is, anything, it doesn't matter if it's a PTA, if it's the Cub Scouts, if it's some kind of a sports team, if it's anything, if you've ever been a part of anything, including the church, there are leaders and followers. And leaders and followers are really just a feature of human nature. Even whenever there's no real, say, organization structure, there's still leaders and followers. I'm telling you, it's that way if there's a mob somewhere. That's just how it works. But now, the disciples of Jesus need to be taught about this. It's understood that there would be leaders and followers, sure. But there needs to be the teaching done on this. And it's something that, well, you know, we need to learn this as well. So I want you to go to Matthew chapter 20. And we'll spend just a little bit of time here looking at a few things. We're going to start in verse 20 and go down through verse 28. Now, if you've got a King James, you're going to see a different word in here. It says serve, you'll have minister. So minister, serve, the words are used interchangeably. Matthew chapter 20 and verses 20 through 28. The mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him. Now keep in mind, they're all thinking about this hierarchy thing. And what's happened here is that the mother of Zebedee's son, James and John, she's got involved in this. And he said to her, "What do you wish?" And she said to him, "Grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and the other on the left in your kingdom." So see, a better place, higher, greater position. But Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" They said to him, "We are able." And so he said to them, "You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared by my Father." And when the 10 heard it, they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Now in these passages, Jesus is showing them about and teaching them about this whole idea about who's going to be the greatest and so on, as they're thinking of a hierarchy type situation. And you can see that this is what's on their mind. They've got their mother involved in this, and she's making a request thinking that perhaps that might sway Jesus into doing this one. And there's the assumption that he's able to do this kind of thing to begin with. And so what you see then in verses 20 and 21 is, the event occurs, late in the ministry of Jesus, about the third year. I think by this time they're on to the idea that he won't be around much longer and so on. He said several things about it. Okay, so in other words, who's going to take over? It's that kind of thing. And so the question is asked. Now in verses 22 and 23, they really think that they've got this kind of a choice. They really do. They think they've got some input on this, and this is almost a guaranteed thing that there's going to be somebody who's going to step into the void after this. But the whole truth of it is that that's not going to happen. Jesus can't give this what you want, what's been asked. I can't give that. It's not mine to give, you see. I think it's interesting there, isn't it? And you know, he even goes on to point out in here, well, the writer does, that the others heard this. They heard about what's going on with James and John, what they've done. And it says they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. Now, you can take your pick on how they're displeased. Are they displeased because they think this was the wrong thing for them to ask? Or are they displeased because they asked for it ahead of them? Take your pick on this. And it could easily be either one. But I think sometimes looking at this, and I wonder, does jealousy enter into this as well? That it's something that maybe the others would like for themselves. It's hard to say. Many critics have a tendency to think that there's this kind of jealousy or competition involved. Now, Jesus clears up the whole thing. By the way, that baptism back there earlier, that's not baptism in water. That's the baptism. He's talking about a baptism of suffering that he's going to be involved in. It would be that which would, you know, cover him up, you know, be everything. And he goes on to point out to him, well, you'll be doing that soon enough. But anyway, when you get to verse 25, he points out here, and this is real simple, you know, the servant is greatest when he serves. And I don't think that's what they had in mind. When he points out about the Gentiles and how they lorded over those, and those who are great exercise authority over them, you know, when he points that out, who doesn't know that that's true? Isn't that what happens out there? Now, he's using the Gentiles here, but that's what happened in the Gentile world. And that's what happens not just in the Gentile world. That's what's happened down through the decades. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's what still happens today. That there is this kind of thing going on. That there is competition. That there is jealousy. That there are people who are self-seeking for themselves for whatever the reason might be. And they can dress it up a lot of times any way they want to. But, you know, we're just seeing things. Excuse me, right now, I'm unconvinced that with all this stuff that's going on right now, every day on the news you hear about it, I wonder to myself, is either side of this really looking for the best interest of the country or the best interest of a political position? And how did it get like that? Well, it didn't get like that. It's always been like that. They say one thing, and it's really not. It's all about positions and power and other things. So we still got this kind of thing today. But he says, even though you know that's how it is, you know that. Look what he says in verse 26. That's not the way it's going to be among you. Now, this is the idea you've got in your head, and get it out of there. And especially, you need to get this out of there. You stop and think how many people there would be that would be looking to the apostles, all of them together now, for leadership in any number of ways. You were studying Acts chapter 15, just started this Sunday morning in Bible class. And one of the things in there, when this business about circumcision after the manner of Moses comes up, and here they are having this dissension and everything up in Antioch and Syria. Well, they don't come to a conclusion on it. What are they going to do? They decide to send some brethren down to Jerusalem to check in with the apostles and the elders about this. Now, I notice it says the idea of several people, apostles, elders, more than one. Don't just go down there and talk to Peter. Don't just go down there and talk to James and John. Go down there and go talk to all of them. See how we can solve this. And that's what they need. They were all leaders at this particular time. And it wasn't this thing of trying to have some kind of one-upmanship, if you will. But he also points out that the servant is greatest when he serves. That's just so different from everything that we're familiar with or accustomed to, and so on. And I really think, you know, one of the things that really, I think it puts a a stumbling block in front of success is when people gather together as a church, and when they come, they expect to be served. Here I am, serve me. Rather than, here I am, what can I do to serve? And I've just always thought that that was just a real problem. And he even goes on to use himself as an example. He did not come to be served, but he came to serve. Now, there were people that served Jesus. That's not what this means. Of course they did. You can come up with any number of cases where there were those that rendered service to Jesus. But that's not why he came. He didn't come like some of these other fables and things whenever a God came to earth and everybody, you know, was expected to do everything the God wanted to do and everything to serve him and all that and all and so on and so on. That's not how it is. Altogether different from everything that a lot of them might have been used to. And not only did he come to serve, but the ultimate act of service at the latter part of verse 28, he was going to give his life as a ransom for many. One would be dying for all. And as he uses himself there as an example of a servant, let's spring off of that for just a moment. You know, he took the ultimate step of servitude, and it says it there, gave his life a ransom for many. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9, and you're likely to be familiar with that, where it says that though he were rich, he became poor. And he became poor for our sakes. And then I think the best place to find out something about this is in Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant, and coming in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. The ultimate step of servitude. I don't think any of us can imagine, in our best day of imagining things, what it would have been like to have been in heaven and then come here. And then come here with the express purpose of dying for people who are sinners, ungodly, and so on. Just to think about it, I think we've got no idea. We have really no real basis in which we can associate with this or anything else. It's just an incredible act of service on the part of Jesus. And then, as an example, while he was here and teaching, one something a little bit more specific. Turn to John chapter 13. Now, he illustrated, and I think quite literally, with a practical example of servitude for the disciples' benefits. You can read about this in John chapter 13, starting in verse 1 through verse 17. Now, I'm not going to read it all, but you know what it is. It's about when Jesus washed the disciples' feet. Now, my understanding is that this is something that was done to or for guests when they came to visit in the house. And someone who was a servant in the house was assigned this duty. And the one who was assigned this duty, the servant who was assigned this duty, he wouldn't be, for example, the chief steward in the house. They wouldn't do it. You know, they would get someone who's one of the humble servants, you might say, that would do something like this. And so Jesus assumes this position of this humble servant to do that. And you can see how the other disciples, they were just a little bit upset by this kind of thing. They thought, well, maybe we ought to be doing this for... No. I need to do this for you so that you can understand this. Verse 7, what I am doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this. So let this go, let it play out, and see what this is. And so he washes their feet. He takes this position as a servant. Verse 16, most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. Now look at verse 17. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. And they would have been, wouldn't they, if they know these things. What he's teaching there about service and what he's showing them and doing to illustrate the whole point of service. Did they know them? How could you miss it? Do we know it? How could we miss it? How are we doing about doing it, though? There's the real question. Showing that kind of service. And so verse 17 actually is key to the account. So this isn't something like some of our religious friends seem to think, that foot washing needs to be part of their gathering together. They wash feet when they come together. No, when they come up with something like that and think that's what it is, they've missed the whole point of this. The whole point's not as an act of worship. It's about learning what it is to be a servant. And the Bible goes on with more teaching, additional points about service. Let's look at a few of them. How about in Ephesians chapter 6? I've always liked Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 7. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 7. You're supposed to serve everyone like it's service to the Lord, with goodwill doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Now he's going on through here and talking about masters in the flesh, and there's this and there's that and the other, and what you ought to do and your duties and exercising this just as general things in life. But you're doing this as it's unto the Lord and not just to men. So serve everyone like it's service to the Lord. That's what it ought to be doing. That's what you ought to be doing. And Paul, when he was writing to the brethren at Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 19, there's something here I think we can learn about service. We're going to start here with verse 19. We'll go down through verse 23. Though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I may win Jews. And to those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law. Now notice what he says here, not being without law toward Christ, or toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you. Now Paul's talking about being every man here, being every man for everybody else. Now please understand that there's limitations with this. Now, Paul says, you know, I'll become weak, I'll do this, I'll do that, whatever it is to win others, I'm willing to do that. But we need to keep in mind that he's not talking about doing everything, whatever it takes, and even becoming involved in sin. Now, for example, he didn't say he'd become an adulterer to win adulterers, or he would become a drunkard to win drunkards. He's not going to go to the bar and sit with somebody and hoist a few in order to, you know, to win the person who sits in there regularly and does that kind of thing. No, there'd be a limit in this. But now, it doesn't mean that he wasn't going to do anything at all. He'd do what he could. to try and win others. And in doing that, he's performing a servant for service for them. I became a servant to all. And this is how you do that. You know, you're willing to talk to somebody. You're willing to help somebody. You know, as much as you can and as far as you can. And as he says there, you know, not without law to God, with law to Christ, and so on. And then also, now we read a few moments ago from Philippians chapter 2. I want to go back over there for just a minute. I'm not going to read over what we did in verses 5 and following. But I'm interested in what comes right before verse 5. Now, verses 5 through 8 are kind of tag along with verses 3 and 4. Verses 3 and 4 are saying, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." And then he goes from there to say, "And let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ." Because Christ did all these things that you see in verses 3 and 4. Okay? I look at that and I think to myself how great that is, the things that are said in 3 and 4. And how much they show us that this is service that we render to others. The lowliness of mind, esteem someone else better than yourself. You know, there's too much of this stuff that goes on today. Even if somebody's rendering service, that somehow or another that I do something, you do something, whatever the case is, you know how this goes, that somebody does something, and then the next thing you know, they're criticizing what someone else does, and they're deciding, well, they're not doing what I do, or they've come far short of the mark of what I do. Well, first of all, good for you that you're doing things. But again, this isn't some kind of competition, and you're not the one who's out here setting the bar, and everybody else needs to follow after that. There's a lot of people that are probably doing everything that it's possible for them to do, and they might not be able to do everything that you do. That seems to go without saying. I think all of us understand that. I've met lots of people. I don't know how many. I wouldn't even want to guess how many different people I've met in the last 40 years of every place I've been, located, preaching all over the place, and the number of people. And I never met anybody that could do everything. I've never met that yet. I've met a lot of people that could do a lot of things, and I've met some people that could do some things. And I found sometimes that people that could only do maybe a few things, they can do it quite well. There's a man out in West Virginia. He passed away by the time I got there. He still had relatives that attended there. And someone was talking about him, and he worked over at the old plant that was over there. It was gone by the time I got, just empty buildings when I got there. And they would talk about him, and they said, you know, he worked over there all those years. And said he had one thing that he could do better than anybody else. Well, I wondered what that was. And I don't know, I thought maybe he could word a prayer real fine, or, you know, teach a class. Never led a prayer, never taught a class, never led a song, never was in front of the brethren, never did announcements, you know, all that. Never greeted someone at the door. What did he do? He said when we had a gospel meeting, he would invite everyone that he worked with to come to the meeting. He could do that one thing, and he could do it well, right? And that makes that something that's important. You do what you can do. And we're, you know, that's the thing here. And furthermore, it says, now don't look out just on your own interest. And this doesn't mean, I think some people think that what this means is, that everything in your interests and everything that you need and all that, well, just throw that under the bus, you know, and give it all up and suffer yourself and go with less, and, you know, I don't understand. This is saying, you know, don't do that. You've got your own interests, you know, maintain those. But keep in mind there are others that have interests as well, and you be involved in that. And then, here comes the example of Jesus starting in verse 5 and following. And now, one more thing. And that's in Matthew chapter 10. I think this is the place to come to a close here in talking about service. In Matthew chapter 10 and verse 42. Whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. That cup of cold water. Think about it for just a moment or two. You know, there's no such thing as service that's too insignificant. A cup of cold water. And I think what this is telling us right here in the words of the Lord, that God sees even the smallest act of service. And I think that we should take encouragement from that and understand that if we're rendering service for someone else, we're doing a good thing and we're doing what the Lord would have us to do. Now, why not begin serving God today, perhaps by obeying the gospel? By believing in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, repenting of your sins, being baptized. And if you've done that, why not today be faithful, make correction, do more, examine things. There's probably lots of things that all of us could do. A little more, a little better. But again, we make choices, as it says there in Romans. So if you're subject to the gospel invitation, now's the time, this is the place. Why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.